Good afternoon, everybody. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to the Vox Pop for this Tuesday, August 15th. I'm Alan Chartok. Violence in Charlottesville, Virginia over the weekend has put race relations in the United States under the microscope once again. The situation turned deadly when a man drove a car into a crowd protesting a white supremacist at a white supremacist rally. One woman was killed, 19 others injured. President Trump announced yesterday the Department of Justice has opened a civil rights investigation of the killing. With us today, and we are very proud to have him here, as we always are, is Albany County District Attorney David Soares. We want to hear from you. The number is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. District Attorney Soares, your calls, much more, all coming up on the Vox Pop. And that's right after this news. Hello once again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. Violence in Charlottesville, Virginia over the weekend has put race relations under the microscope once again. The situation turned deadly when a man drove a car into a crowd protesting a white supremacist rally. One woman was killed, 19 others injured. The Department of Justice has opened a civil rights investigation into the killing. Here to discuss the matter is Albany County District Attorney, a friend of WAMC and a great guy, in office since 2005. The Democrat is a graduate of Cornell University Albany Law School. To participate in today's discussion, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can check in with your questions and comments, but do it just email us at voxpop@wamc.org if that's the way you want to do it. Well, District Attorney David Soares, welcome to the program. We're so glad you're here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, we love having you here, and you are an incredible voice in our community. Let me ask you about this. Do you have any original, off-the-cuff sense of what's happening in this country right now?
I do, and it's just a painful reminder of the issues that we have yet to fully discuss and to address. And so, you know, the manifestations of our failure to properly address them continue to surface, and you see them in incidents like this. So we'll go from a situation where a young deranged person will shoot people in a church to, you know, protest rallies like this. And we, as a country, we cannot continue to speak about race relations only in the context of traumatic events. We have to do it constantly.
As a man of the law, but extra legally, does Donald Trump bear responsibility for the kinds of things and actions you've just been talking about?
I don't think that Donald Trump bears legal responsibility, but I do think that as a leader, you have a moral responsibility to be very guarded with what you say, how you say, and when you say them. There are people out there who follow you, who listen to everything that you say, and you know you don't know what people are capable of. And I think that while you can't directly point to the president and say he's responsible, I certainly think that he's created a much more open environment for people who share these racist beliefs to speak openly and comfortably about them.
Well, so what's to be done?
Well, what's to be done, I think, is just, I think we're seeing it. I think we see communities coming together when events like this take place, and I think we see this energy around having discussions, but I think that those energies, you know, they dissipate rather quickly. And we await for other events before we begin talking about them again. And so I was so pleasantly surprised to see how the Albany County community reacted to it by having that event at Townsend Park during the weekend. And I'm just so pleasantly surprised and by how other communities have reacted to this as well.
Do you think that people in our community show signs of having, you know, been infected by this? I mean, is there any sense that you have with your ear to the ground that this rhetoric that's been coming out of the White House has been affecting our people?
I think it's exhausting. I think that people wake up every morning to news coming out of our White House. And I think, you know, whatever amount of weight you attribute to it. I think people walk in with shoulders slumped into the workplace and other common areas and begin their conversations by discussing what's going on, you know, with our federal government. I think it's just very exhausting. But I do think that people are more attuned. They're paying much more attention. And I think people are on both sides are more active. And I hate to say the word radicalized.
Interesting. We'll go to Jack in Schenectady. All right, Jack, you're on. Go ahead.
Hi, Dr. Chartok. Thank you so much. I appreciate you taking my call. And my question is about the concept of protected speech, because it seems like the leaders of these kind of racist movements like to always tout free speech, and anybody speaking against them is limiting their free speech. So I was curious about to hear about what our guests had to say about whether or not them speaking out in racist ways is actually protected free speech.
Well, before you answer, David, I want to tell you, one of the reasons I admire David Soros so much is that he is a protector of free speech and has been from the very beginning. I remember when Governor Cuomo wanted people prosecuted for assembling outside the Capitol. And David Soros, a great hero of mine, for this reason, among many others, said, no, we're not going to do that. So you want to answer?
You know, there's a certain benefit that I guess local people here have, me being one of them, and that is we are in the capital of the state of New York, and we are a few blocks down from where, you know, our laws are made. And so you're going to have people on various sides of a discussion or issue that are going to be very vocal about how they feel, and therefore being in the capital city, you have to be a person who, you know, respects protected speech. It may be speech that we don't agree with, but you as an individual, as a person in law enforcement, you have to protect that individual's rights to express those words as unkind as they are. And I think right now we are at a place in our country where we're coming so dangerously close to drowning out voices we disagree with. I mean, there are certain things from conservative and right-wing world that I think are downright nutty. But I'm not of the opinion that a university should foreclose the opportunity for one of those people to come and speak at their campuses. I think that that's a fundamental right that we have, and I just think that we have to be more tolerant of people who share different opinions.
So, Jack, thank you so much for your telephone call. 1-800-348-2551. A great opportunity to speak to David Soares, the Albany County District Attorney, and a man of great wisdom. 1-800-348-2551. David, I know that this business that you've just raised about the idea that colleges and universities are saying, no, you can't come, has really affected an awful lot of people.
I marvel at the fact that it's colleges and universities that are, in a sense, they are making the decision as to who speaks in front of their students. Students should hear differing views, and colleges are supposed to be in existence to teach people how to think. I have to tell you, I disagree with the likes of Ann Coulter. I think they're more entertainers than they are pundits. I think it's an act. I think there's a lot of disingenuousness in when they're out there talking about their so-called views. But I certainly would never deprive someone like that of an opportunity to share her opinions and thoughts with an audience. And I would have every confidence in the world that the audience would walk away with the ability to make up their own minds about what they thought of her presentation. But the idea that we're going to just deprive her of even speaking is profoundly wrong to me.
Well, it's true. And one of the things I worry about every once in a while is while our audience may be a little center-left here, we get regular phone calls saying, get Herb London off the air 4 minutes, 4 minutes a week. because we don't like what he's saying. He's not our guy. I think you're right about the need to keep our minds open so that we can hear everything. I don't agree with a word the guy says, but I treasure the fact that he's on.
I listen to these people sometimes when I'm mowing my lawn and I have my headset on, and I find myself speaking to myself, actively debating with them what it is that they're articulating. And I think that's important because it keeps me sharp in being able to provide a response to some of the things that are being said. And there's a value to that that I think that that we earn when we are listening to people that we disagree with.
The phone calls are coming in. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll be right back with District Attorney David Soares.
Support for WAMC comes from College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts. For over 30 years, specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repair and 24-hour towing, full-service gas includes checking of fluids, tire pressure, and window washing. CollegeStreetMotors.com. Gazebo, Northampton, Massachusetts, an independent lingerie shop specializing in bra and post-mastectomy fittings, providing support to the Pioneer Valley for almost 40 years. The-Gazebo.com. Basin Harbor, Lake Champlain, Vermont. Lakefront accommodations for vacations, weddings, and conferences, featuring a championship golf course and new boat club with 40 slips for overnight stays. BasinHarbor.com for details. Vermont Coffee Company, offering slow-roasted organic coffee in the brown paper bag at local grocery stores. Vermont Coffee Company, coffee roasted for friends. And the Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences in the Capital District and beyond. Skidmore.edu/Tang.
Thank you very much. We'll go to Lewis in Warwick, Mr. District Attorney, if it's okay with you.
Sure.
And Lewis in Warwick, you're on.
Hi, good afternoon, buddy. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Like many, I'm aghast over what I see over the internet. As I see it, we have an armed, insigniated, organized militia, perhaps crossing state lines to descend upon a neighborhood to express their First Amendment rights, which seem to be that they have the right to bear arms. Their First Amendment rights and their Second Amendment rights really shouldn't mix. It's a bad mixture. Also, your free speech can't be, we're going to overthrow the government with these arms. And that's what they proclaim really to do.
Okay,
Lewis,
I want to hear from the DA on this. Added to your remarks, which are very good, come from Justin, who says, to what extent is free speech protected if it incites violence? David?
Well, that's where the limitations of free speech exist, is when it is inciting people to violence. However, the danger that you run into as a member of law enforcement, the danger that you run into is determining where that line is. And you always want to be sure of where that line is, because you don't want to, in the course trying to do something proactive, you don't want to end up depriving someone of their civil liberties. And I have to tell you that those are the issues that came across to me over the weekend watching what was happening in Charlottesville, was the fact that the people that were there with weapons. And as you know, Virginia, it's an open carry state. And so that is something that we as Americans, depending on where you live, are going to have to become more accustomed to seeing. And the fact that you're seeing armed people with Nazi regalia is something that is so troubling, and the imagery there is frightening. And I can't imagine, if you were a veteran of World War II, what must have been running through your mind as you're sitting at home watching what just transpired in Charlottesville. There are limitations to the First Amendment, as there are limitations to the Second Amendment. However, you have to be very cautious as a member of law enforcement on your actions, because you don't want to ever impede on someone's freedom of speech or even the right to bear arms without cause.
So let me give you a tough one. A group pulled down a statue and pulled it down. They didn't have any authority. They did it. They were furious at the fact that a Confederate symbol was up there. But they broke the law in order to do that. Reaction?
Well, here's a couple of strange things that could occur as a result of what transpired over the week. You've just cited to the group of protesters that tore down the statue of Robert E. Lee. They did so. They took photos. The law enforcement knows who they are because these photos have been published. And if that local prosecutor decides that he wants to prosecute those people for engaging in that kind of property damage, that prosecutor is well within his or her right to do that. The other strange thing that'll result out of what transpired over the weekend is you may have a situation where the federal government prosecutes the anti-protesters for possibly depriving the Nazis of their First Amendment rights. And as strange as that may sound, that is a possibility.
Sure. Okay, we go to Arthur in Clifton Park. Arthur, you're on.
Hello there.
Hello.
Mr. Soares, I happen to live through World War II, and those Nazi symbols do make my blood crawl. But a question to you, in listening to the various reports of what was coming out of Charlottesville over the weekend, it appears that there's an instigator down there who sort of organized this rally, if you will, apparently suggesting that the people should come in with weapons and with helmets and flak jackets and so on. It sounds as if he's instigating a civil disobedience. I'm just wondering, Mr. Soares, wouldn't there be a possibility of a prosecution for conspiracy in a situation like that?
A prosecution on a theory of a conspiracy could be successful if you could demonstrate and prove that the organizer had intended to create the kind of chaos that you saw, and part of the instruction that the organizer had given was to, in fact, engage the counter protesters. So there, if there is any evidence that would surface that would indicate that the organizers went to Charlottesville with that intention, and in fact worked to coerce others to engage in this kind of conduct, then you certainly could make out a case against the organizers. And by the way, that was a very good question, and I want to thank you for your service, sir.
Okay.
We have been hearing, Arthur, we've been hearing from a lot of people who had fathers and grandfathers who fought in the war and who are incensed by the, as you are, by the Nazi symbols.
I will tell you that's the first thing that came across to me was, what are our veterans who fought in World War II? What are they thinking right now watching this happen in their own home? And the irony, too, of the American who traveled to Germany and had given the Heil Hitler sign and was assaulted by Germans. I mean, you can't make this up.
And Angela Merkel criticizing what happened in Charlottesville.
Exactly.
Shoes on the other foot. Yeah. Thank you, Arthur. Great call. Appreciate it. 1-800-348-2551 for David Soares. 1-800-348-2551. We'll go to Jill in Waterford. Okay, Jill, you're on.
Hi. I have a comment regarding the hate speech and the speech from someone like Ann Coulter that we just simply disagree with. I think there's a difference. I would say, yeah, we disagree with Ann Coulter and let her speak at the colleges. But if you're going to have someone come to a college who's engaging in hate speech, a Ku Klux Klan wizard or neo-Nazi person in charge or whatever, I don't think that should be permitted, because we're trying to train our children and our students to do the right thing. And if you get someone in that college who the hate speaker manages to touch, you're just perpetuating that to the next generation.
You know, it's a slippery slope, isn't it, David? Because, I mean, I remember, I'm old now, but I remember that back when I was at Hunter College, they tried to invite Norman Thomas, the famous socialist, to speak there. And the college administration really didn't want that guy there claiming all of the stuff that we're talking about now were going to happen, and terrible stuff. Now, all these years later, I think a third of the elementary schools in New York City are named after Norman Thomas. So things change.
And I think Jill, you are absolutely right. I mean, there is a difference between hate speech, and there's a difference between speech that people disagree with. However, I think it's important that we remember that both hate speech and disagreeable speech are speeches that are words that are protected by the First Amendment. And I agree with you. I mean, if you were inviting someone who may have a big difference of opinion, such as an Ann Coulter or even a Bill O'Reilly, to a college campus, you know, I may decide I don't want to go and sit and listen to what either one of them had to say. But that's different than a university or any organization depriving of those individuals the opportunity to say what it is that they have to say.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but if you're going to do that, then it seems to me you need to have others there, someone there that's going to counteract that. Because, I mean, I have a niece that's in college, and we're also African-American. We're an African-American family. And I would hate to think that this hate speech from these neo-Nazis is going to have my niece turn around and hate white folks. Or by the same token, have someone, anyone who happens to decide they want to sympathize with this hate speech, and like I said before, perpetuate it into the next generation. Where does it end?
I certainly think that there is that there are instances where that happens, but in my experience, what I see is the complete opposite of that happening. I see communities galvanizing around what is right. I mean, it's not too different than what I see whenever a particular community is overcome by some terrorist action. You see people in France and people all over the world galvanizing around what we can all agree is some crime against humanity. And I think that happens more often than the opposite, although you do have individuals that are inspired by hate speech once they're exposed to it and begin to, those lights turn on and then they become little monsters. I certainly understand that.
Hey, thank
Alan, can I just have one very quick
Go ahead.
Question
sure.
regarding the policeman who posted that Facebook comment? And I disagree with it completely, but putting the shoe on the other foot, would that cop have the right to express his First Amendment right in that way?
David, so what happened is a cop goes online and says something like, ha ha, now the shoe's on the other foot, in response. So the question is, if an Albany policeman were to do something like that, would that be a violation of their responsibilities as a cop here in Albany?
See, those are two separate questions, ma'am, because I do think that officer, you know, as a As a person who's sworn to protect the Constitution, that officer would have every right to post whatever that officer wanted. The question then becomes, does that police department have the right to not have an individual like that represent them? And that's the better question of the two. So you do have an absolute right to think what you want to think and to say what you want to say, but I also have the right as an employer to not have you representing my company.
Thanks, Jill. Proud to have you call in.
Thank you very much again.
Right. Bye. Okay. Let's go to, let's see here. Dave in Waterville. Dave, you're on.
Hi, Mr. Soares. You know, I wanted to ask you a question about your comment with colleges, and you mentioned Ann Coulter, I believe. Does a college, is it right for a college to not allow someone like that to speak on campus? And I guess in my mind, the question isn't, Is it wrong for the college not to allow conservative viewpoints to be addressed? But is Ann Coulter really or Tucker Carlson or Sean Hannity really the right person for that? They are entertainers. They're not conservative intellectuals. So I think that's something the colleges have to take into consideration when they bring these people on, because these people are looking for headlines, and they're going to do things that will generate headlines. So I think the college does have a responsibility to screen these speakers and not to shut down conservative thought necessarily, but to bring in qualified conservative thought. Okay. For that matter, why not let me speak on a college campus? But obviously they're not going to, because I'm not credentialed. So my question all would be then, who are these days the qualified intellectual conservative thinkers? They never seem to show themselves or present themselves. Who would you want to see talk on a college campus, about a conservative viewpoint? I'd really like to know who these people are. Well, and I'm going to hang up and listen to your comments.
No, don't do that. Don't do that. Don't do that. We may want to ask you a question. Go ahead, David.
Okay.
Well, I think, you know, and I singled out Ann Coulter just because I think I was listening to a podcast over the weekend where she had been speaking, but I didn't mean to just single her out independently. There are other people that I vehemently disagree with. I guess what I'm saying is that I just don't think that the people I disagree with should be deprived of their opportunity to express themselves. And I think when we start to engage in creating, let's say, a committee that will determine who's legitimate and who's not legitimate, I think it's just a slippery slope that invites further deprivation of free speech. And I just think that that's a very dangerous proposition.
I hope you don't mind, Dave. I want to take a shot at this, too. As you know, I've spoken of it before. We have one guy who I don't agree with for a single word, Herb London, on once a week. And I get calls all...
Who I do listen to when he's on, even though I disagree with him.
Exactly.
At least he's articulate.
Exactly. He's articulate. But I get calls, believe it or not, all the time saying, why don't you get a real conservative? This guy's a phony conservative. And I say, yeah, well, he ran on the conservative ticket for one of the highest offices in New York State. He was the head of one of the largest conservative think tanks in New York State, and a professor, full professor, and the dean at NYU. Now, exactly what kind of conservative credential do you have to have? Right, Dave?
I'm not qualified to answer that question, but I see your point.
Yeah. Well, no, you are qualified because you asked the question, and we want to talk to you about it.
And I will tell you that my favorite conservative person to listen to is George Will.
He's terrific.
Because
good point. Yeah,
I may not agree with George Will, but in his articulation, he at least can share with me how he arrives at his conclusion. And I appreciate that, because I know precisely where it is in his analysis that I find disagreement. That makes me a better thinker.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Dave, thank you for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Very good call.
Right. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Matthew in Athens. You're on. Go ahead, Matthew.
Hi. Just a little observation. I definitely agree with
Mr. Soares about the allowing all different viewpoints. I'm of the age that when I was younger, I used to have to subscribe to magazines because there was no internet. And I would subscribe to the National Review, Mother Jones. So ultra-right-wing, ultra-left-wing, I'm actually very left-wing, because you wanted to hear what the other point of view is. It's healthy. I also agree with Mr. Soares that people like Ann Coulter and like Milo Yiannopoulos, whatever, they're entertainers. And part of, I think, what students at SUNY had, I think Ann Coulter was supposed to speak there, was they didn't want their student money paying for her to speak. So what if SUNY offers these people who are entertainers and salespeople the opportunity to speak and just have a tip jar at the foot of the stage, and they only get paid what people put in the tip jar? Do you think that they would actually come and speak, or is it the money that's motivating them?
Well, it's hard for me to say, because you're asking me to put myself in the mind of someone else, but I doubt that they would travel here as people who also have a business interest to come and do that. And I also think, I think the student body of any university certainly has the right to determine who they would like coming onto their campus and who they would like to have their thoughts shared with. And so I agree with both your points. And, you know, I too am from that generation where, you know, we had to order magazine subscriptions. I think part of the problem, though, however, is exactly as you said, right? I mean, right now there's just so much material out there in the internet that people who are of a certain ideology can just basically find the bubble that they want to exist in and do that every single day with no tolerance for what anyone else is saying. And that's a much bigger problem, I think, that we face moving forward.
Oh, thank you so much for the call. Great question, because we got to take a break. Thanks a lot. Okay, we'll take a short break. We'll be right back with District Attorney David Soares.
Support for WAMC comes from Saratoga Jewish Cultural Festival, presenting Doing Jewish, A Story of Ghana, August 23rd, 7 p.m., at the Bowtie Cinemas, downtown Saratoga Springs. Reservations requested. SaratogaJewishCulturalFestival.org for details. Vision XL Eye Care, Lake Katrine. Exams, eye care, dry eye therapy, and now new American-made frames, where eyewear is an art. VisionXLEyeCare.com. Maybe Farm Historic Site, Rotterdam Junction, presenting the annual Arts and Crafts Festival, featuring handmade arts and crafts, jewelry, clothing, pottery, baskets, soaps, and more, August 26th, 10 to 3, SchenectadyHistorical.org. The Arkell Museum at Canajoharie, presenting Truth is the Only Safe Ground to Stand Upon, Portraits of Suffragists by Christine Heller, a centennial celebration, ArkellMuseum.org. And the Black Sheep, downtown Amherst, a New York-style delicatessen and European-style all-butter-scratch bakery, caterer, and cafe offering fair trade coffee. BlackSheepDeli.com.
And we are back thanks to our wonderful Joshua. Thanks to our wonderful staff here. Let me ask you this. Please ask Mr. Soares about Wayne Bennett, former state police superintendent and Schenectady Public Safety Commissioner, who died today.
You know, it's so sad to have heard that. And I certainly read the article some time ago about him taking ill. You know, as a prosecutor who, you know, when you show up to work on a particular morning, you have no idea what's waiting for you on the other side.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I remember just as being very new in office and having to deal with some pretty heavy cases. And, you know, when you pick up that phone and you're calling for assistance from the New York State Police, and a man of the stature of Mr. Bennett comes walking through the door, it does provide you with a sense of relief. And he's always gave me the feeling that, we, you know, if I'm here, we're going to be in it together. And you can't put a price tag on the level of confidence that a person like that instilled on, you know, in everyone around you when you were going through some difficult things.
Thank you, David. Let's go to Christine. I want to go in the correct order in which people call. So we have Dave, Bob, and Christine. We'll go to Dave first on line number three. All right, Dave, you're on.
Yeah, I hope I'm the only Dave. I'm not.
Well, there's David Soares. There's David Soares. There's David. David.
Good. Thanks. Thanks for taking the call and important but complicated subject. Two aspects of it. I'd be curious about. The freedom of expression piece. I get and I agree with a lot of the prior callers. The Ann Coulters of the world should have a right. To speak. We can't close ourselves off to ideas just because we don't agree with them. But it does seem to me that there is a point beyond which we cross over into violence. And I don't know what the legal statutes say about this, but I certainly do hope that they say it is illegal for me to stand there in a bully pulpit and say death to Jews, death to African Americans. I think it's illegal to say death to the president. I don't know where that line is, you know, in terms of crossing over to violence, but there are some, I think, pretty compelling surrogates for it, and Heil Hitler, to my mind, certainly qualifies. So that's the one part that I'd like to get your thoughts on. The other part has to do with just the public safety aspect of it. I mean, we can go back to Lincoln when he suspended habeas corpus. We can look at, you know, Ferguson and in various, you know, riot situations where curfews in the interest of public safety were put in place. So, you know, at the intersection of those two things is what I'm interested in learning, you know, more about, because I do think there's a big difference between listening to viewpoints that you yourself don't agree with and allowing people to actually stand up there and say, you know, death to a particular group, whether they say that word or Heil Hitler. To me, there isn't a whole lot of difference. So your thoughts on that?
Well, just let me point out that before David goes, and that is that Germany, you can't say any of that stuff. It's against the law. In this country, you can, and we know it, Skokie, Illinois, in which, you know, Jews were listening to those. And I tell you, I had no patience for it myself, being Jewish. But the court's saying, no, they can go, they can march. David?
Well, the people that are going to be the most interested in figuring out where that intersection that you've just pointed out between free speech and the provocation and violence are the investigators who are currently disseminating what has to be, you know, hundreds upon hundreds of hours of video footage as they're trying to identify and figure out exactly what took place. You're going to want to know who the first individual that swung a baton is. You're going to want to know, you know, what exactly was being said, you know, what and who did. So, you know, as chaotic as events looked on television, trust me when I tell you that there are investigators right now, a pile of them sitting in a room going frame by frame and examining every single altercation that took place. Some of the challenges that they have to look forward to is that many of the individuals that were there were not locals, and therefore they're going to need to collaborate with other law enforcement communities to see if individuals who were on screen engaging in the behavior are people from their communities. And so right now what we have are preliminary charges that we know against the individual who operated the motor vehicle and crashed into the people. So you should look forward to seeing additional charges should the evidence be there once the investigators are done sifting. But I anticipate seeing more individuals named as defendants by the time this is all said and done.
And while you're on the subject of this, obviously Jeff Sessions has taken a different view on this as the chief law enforcement officer in the United States than the president of the United States did, got out in front of him. Did you make anything out of that?
It's almost impossible to wake up every day, turn on whether it's CNN, whether it's Fox, and try to figure out what's going on in this administration when you're getting a half dozen different viewpoints that are that mm-hmm. you can attribute to an individual, and then you have another half dozen that are being not attributed to named individuals. So I don't know what to make of that.
Hey, Dave, we're coming to the end of the program. I thank you so much for your call. Thanks a lot. We'll go now to Bob in Albany. All right, Bob in Albany on line number two. You're on, Bob.
Thanks, Alan.
Sure.
Listening to this, I get a feeling that the college campus administrators are abdicating their responsibilities in allowing some of these people to speak on campus, not because I'm against free speech, but because a number of these people are neither entertainers nor conservative thinkers. They are self-described provocateurs, and they exist, or at least they make a living out of pushing the envelope as far as they can and then going beyond that, because that gets them yet more paid gigs. And since the administrators are the ones that provide the money for the organization, the campus organizations that bring these people in, they should set up guidelines as to what constitutes a legitimate speaker and then defend them as need be.
Two words. Thomas Paine. Provocateur, right?
Okay.
Well, I mean, in other words,
and then you get somebody like the young pedophile, Yanis, unpronounceable.
I think you may have a factual. I'm sorry, David, for interfering on your time here, but I think you may have a little bit wrong here. I think a great deal of that money is raised directly from students into student organizational fees, not supplied by the administrators. But in any case, David Soares, your program. Go ahead.
Well, one of the things that I wanted to comment, touching on something that you said, is today it's very different to determine who is doing the editorial portion in a newspaper, for example, who the opinion writer is and who the reporter is. And a reporter is supposed to report facts and allow for you to make up your own mind. And the opinion writer is definitely writing with the idea that there's with their own opinion help. There's a lot of confusion. So I agree with you in the sense that when you watch a news show, depending on what channel you turn on to, you know, I think people have to watch it with the idea in mind of is this being reported to me cleanly so I can make up my own mind? Is this the opinion of someone else that they're trying to impose upon me? Or is this some editorial that's coming from, you know, the network or... And that's very confusing for the average consumer. But I also, I just have to make this point one more time, and that is, it's a dangerous proposition when we start to allow others to determine who is legitimate and who is not legitimate. Be it a campus board or a president, because that is censorship. I think you can get into censorship.
And sometimes those presidents take a little money from alumni who may have a hand in all of this, right? Okay.
Well, one quick last comment. You were talking about Jeff Sessions and whether he's turning towards being a serious enforcer of civil rights. The Times reported today that they're dropping the program that lists white supremacist organizations as worthy of being under continual investigation.
Interesting.
So I think that speaks volumes.
Yeah, it does. Thanks very much. Appreciate your call.
Bye-bye.
Okay, now we're going to go to Christine in Woodstock. All right, Christine, you're on. Thanks for your patience.
Hi, Alan. Thank you so much for always having such wonderful people on your great forums here, and thank you, Don. My comment is, I heard the governor say that those people had more arms than their police did, and I was wondering, how did that actually come about that law passed? And for those, like, major, huge guns to be able to be walked around the street at a very dangerous protest, and how do we reverse that?
And Christine, let me interrupt only because we're running towards the end of the show. We got a couple of minutes. David Soares.
Well, those laws came about because the people of Virginia, through their legislators, decided that they wanted to live in a state where you have more flexible, open carry legislation. And so for states that have similar legislation, which there are many, and I'm not offering an opinion one way or the other here, that is going to be the new normal. to see protests like this at state capitals, at other institutions, where you will see people who are armed. And therefore,
is there any way to reverse this?
Well, it's the individuals, the people who reside in those states that will ultimately make that decision, and through their representatives decide that
variation. The federal government has nothing to say about it.
No, the Congress does, as you know, and the Supreme Court of the United States has ruled very clearly about people's rights to have guns.
Oh, God help us.
So I have a question following up on your good question for David Soares. If you eliminated guns in our big cities in this state, if you did that, would you see a lot less crime?
You know, here's the truth. After the death of a beautiful young 8-year-old girl here, Katina Thomas, back in 2012, and we removed over 500 guns from the streets of Albany through a buyback program, what we saw was a rise in assaults, in assault firsts and assault seconds that involved other weapons. And so what we have is a violence problem. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what we need to get at. And I think we lose sight of the violence issues when we start to make guns the central issue.
Christine, thank you. Let's go now to Ron in New Paltz. Okay, Ron in New Paltz, you're on.
Hello, David. I have a question. I'm not a legal mind, but it seems like we're in a pioneering legal moment in America, where you talked a little bit about free speech, and it seems like we're kind of bleeding over a little bit into freedom of press. And what is the responsibility of the press to define their hateful press, meaning do they incite and escalate and less escalate until it becomes a moment, you know, in an era of social media and news cameras and radio shows? Do you keep hammering an agenda until it becomes an agenda? If nobody showed up to a hateful march, maybe we wouldn't be having this conversation.
Well, that may be true. And, you know, I'm not one for – look, I believe that the Fourth Estate has a tremendous responsibility of making sure that they're always pulling back the veil and creating transparency between our government and the citizenry. But I, you know, as I said earlier, I think that the Fourth Estate is, you know, is having to deal with something that I don't think they've ever had to deal with before, and that's the realities of the economy, with competitors coming into the marketplace from a wide variety of platforms, and therefore they too are pursuing the stories that garner more interest. I don't think it's any accident that, you know, you can open up the most legitimate newspaper in the country and find stories about Kanye West and the Kardashians. I mean, that's there, and it's there very intentionally because they too, they're, you know, they have to succumb to market principles and the reality of the new market. So I just think that there is a responsibility on the part of government and the part of the Fourth Estate for all of us to do a much more effective job at our jobs. And I'm not preaching to anyone, and I certainly have received the benefit and cooperation of our local press when I've asked for things like not disclosing the name of a particular witness or identity of a particular witness who's taking the stand. And I think they demonstrate tremendous responsibility there. But I'm very cautious of media that projects themselves as legitimate media when, in fact, they are not. I'm very, you know, cautious about getting my information from media sources that are owned by certain companies with motivations. And so I think as the citizenry and consumers of the news, we also have a responsibility of making sure that we're getting, you know, real, unfiltered, and unadulterated information.
By the way,
yeah,
Dave,
I wasn't making a comment of whether it was legit or not. I was trying to dig in a little bit to where the media could fertilize an escalation.
Yeah, I don't think that the media fertilized.
Okay, Ron, we got to sum up here. Go ahead, David.
I don't think the media fertilized this information. I'll tell you, Ron, how this has helped me. You know, the local police department here, the Albany Police Department that patrols the, you know, the state capitol as well as the state police, they do an exceptional job of you know, handling protesters and properly navigating protesters through the criminal justice system. But what this has taught me watching this is that we can do better.
Okay, Ron, I wish we could speak more. We cannot.
Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, Ron. I apologize to Martin from Cohoes, to Melinda from Cheshire, Massachusetts, and from Bruce from Kingston. We're not going to get to them. I know they had important questions to ask, and David Soares, it was wonderful to have you with us today. We're out of time. Thanks to Albany County District Attorney David Soares for joining us. Support for the Vox Pop comes from Amherst Copy and Design Works, offering printing and copying, sign making and design services from booklets to stationery and labels to lawn signs in downtown Amherst, Massachusetts. AmherstCopy.com, Bassett Healthcare, providing information on partial knee replacement at educational seminars across central New York. Say no to kneepain.com for dates and locations. The University of Albany Theater Program, working to train the next generation of performance designers, technicians, playwrights, and stage managers. Albany.edu/theater. Hawkins House, Bennington, Vermont, a crafts market featuring Ed Levin and other handcrafted jewelry, pottery, blown glass, woodenware, clothing, handbags, accessories, Vermont products, and more, HawkinsHouse.net. Thanks to our engineer, Zach Malloy. That's Zach Malloy. Thanks to Colleen O'Connell for answering the phones today. Our producers, Jim Lavoulis. I'm Alan Shartok. David Soares, once again, thanks for being with us.